Okay, hey, welcome everybody. It is Wednesday, 7 o'clock. Sci-Fi Distilled. Welcome back, Kent.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Bruce. Again, just saw you, and of course, welcome, Mary Beth.
Hi, guys.
How's everybody doing? Hello.
We're doing great.
We're doing well. We got a little different show tonight. We're doing kind of books that we think should be movies and books that were made into movies that should not have been made into movies or done better in this case. So, but before we do that, I think Mary Beth has news.
I have a wee bit of news for us tonight. And as always, I take comments from the Peanut Gallery. NASA has tweeted and Dr. Alexander has told us that they've had to move the Artemis launch back to November 16 due to Tropical Storm Nicole. I hope she stays a tropical storm. I hope she does not become a hurricane. Shazam 2, March 17th, which is St. Patrick's Day. We're all looking forward to that. It's clear that the BBC... Okay, did you guys hear about this? Disney Plus has acquired Doctor Who. So that's cool. I mean, that's awesome. I want to see that there. But fans are like kind of worried about like Whovians are worried about the Disneyfication of their favorite
Well, it's not... They just bought the rights to show it, right? They don't own it.
So, yeah.
BBC still owns that. They're going to still produce those shows.
I'm guessing, but it says the new deal with Disney Plus to become the sole proprietor of the show.
In the U.S., I bet.
Yeah, that means only
buying it up. It says in streaming and on the international front says a lot because they're now going to drop $200 million to produce per episode to produce, I believe two per episode.
Wow.
I mean, hang on, let me read this.
$200 million per episode? No, I
can't give you. Strangely, it shows because $2 million agrees with Doctor Who has, 3 to 4 million per episode. Sorry. They're dropping 3 to 4 million. They're going to give Russell Davies 3 to 4 million per episode. That's going to give Russell a lot to play with. So we'll see what happens with that.
That's a big budget.
That's a very big budget.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
This is according to a new report, Doctor Who will improve.
I have not been thrilled with the last.
It says, according to a new report, Doctor Who episodes will now have 10 million pounds to burn through, which is triple the amount they had before. So I think Disney's dropping some money into Doctor Who. I don't know.
Can I ask a question here?
Yeah.
Has anybody seen Disney headquarters? Is it glowing green and sort of cube-like now? Are they have they been taken over by the board and are slowly assimilating everything?
Yeah, what don't they? Well, they don't own Star Trek.
Give them time.
Not yet.
Yet. Moving on to another Disney property. Star Wars The Acolyte is the new thing, and everyone's excited because the Matrix star Carrie Ann Moss has been announced as part of the cast. She's fresh off her return as Trinity in Matrix Resurrections. And she should make a really interesting, like, just given the tone of Andor lately, I can see Carrie Moss fitting in quite nicely. If this has the same era, the same tone, we'll see. In what is being called an abrupt and stunning turn by showrunners, HBO has decided just Friday to cancel Westworld.
I just didn't like that show very much.
I loved the first season.
I saw the first two seasons, felt like I was having to try to figure out what in the hell were timeline, you know, they jump around in
time. It jumps around a lot, yeah.
It was too much thinking.
As recently as mid-October,
for their own good, in my opinion. That's
how I felt about it. So as recently as 3 weeks ago, showrunners Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy still thought they had a show. We had conceived of a fifth and final season. They wanted to wrap it all up. Interesting, the main cast is supposedly, guys, still going to be paid for season 5. But ratings were down, viewership was down, and there's a general dissatisfaction in the fandom, so I don't know. In more bad news for Westworld showrunners Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, their other project, The Peripheral, is also tanking. I've been watching it. It's complicated, but I like it. The Amazon Prime series has earned mediocre to bad reviews from critics, and most viewers just say they're confused. I admit I'm a little confused, too. They had confirmed season 2 and 3 impossible, but unless this thing suddenly picks up, it's not guaranteed.
I think that's the point I'm trying to make. I think they try to get too clever for their own good, and they lose the mainstream audience. It just, you know, think about it. When you watch television, and this is just my opinion, of course, you're at a point where you want to relax. You just want to enjoy and be entertained, and not necessarily just be spoon fed information. But if you're working so hard to go
to know what's going on,
who's that guy? Why did he do that? I don't remember. Is that the guy from before? What's he doing there now? It doesn't make, you know.
Yeah.
And people just turn it off. I mean, there's always going to be a certain fandom that's going to like it and get it. But yeah, if it doesn't.
I'm with you. I like it, but I don't know what's going on.
You know, I'm watching Dark, which is a German show. It's on Netflix, but it's a German show, English dubbed. I call it the darker version of Stranger Things. It's based on a book called A Journey Through Time. Cool. But it's a good show. But again, you have to kind of pay attention because it's about time travel and they're jumping through like 4 different eras of time. And basically you crawl through a cave that's basically a wormhole and you come out in another, you know, 30 years prior or 30 years in the future. Depending what cave you take. Anyway, it's an interesting show. And it's got 3 seasons on Netflix if you want to watch it. But same thing, you got to kind of pay attention.
Yeah.
The Dark?
Dark. It's just called Dark.
Dark. Okay. Dark. I'll add that to my look at list.
Yeah. The Peripheral is an adaptation of William Gibson's novel. And he, since we're talking about novels tonight and books tonight, he's also known for Mona Lisa Overdrive and Neuromancer. Neuromancer is another one of those ones that they keep trying to make a movie or a TV show out of. And it doesn't quite fly, but they keep trying. Eventually they will.
Well, they did Johnny Mnemonic.
I don't know that Johnny Mnemonic is 100% Neuromancer.
No.
More people link Neuromancer actually to Blade Runner, which I know everyone else links it to Do Androids Dream Electric Sheep, but yeah, it had influences. Anyway, moving on. Stranger Things fans, fresh off of Stranger Things Day. Did you guys know there was Stranger Things Day? It was just this last Sunday, November 6th.
I did not know that.
You were supposed to dress up in your favorite character, whatever. They love that creaking spooky Creel house where Vecna set up his lair. Fans are excited to know that in real life house has just gone up for sale in Rome, Georgia. It's 6,000 square feet Gothic Revival mansion, dates back to 1882, has 7 bathrooms and 6 bedrooms, and it's only for sale for a cool $1.5 million. So if we all chip in,
and possessed by a demon, so,
and possibly possessed by a demon. And finally tonight, Halo TV show is up and running. Rizzo was watching that, said it was pretty good. And you were also talking, Rizzo, about Fallout last week. Well, yeah. Netflix is all set to make a film and animated series, both. They've already announced both.
That's Prime, I thought.
Interesting.
On Gears of War.
Oh, one Gears of the most War. I'm sorry.
Popular Xbox video games.
Yeah, that was one of the, I think Fallout has a longer history because Fallout goes all the way back to the 90s.
The announcement, the announcement
is the 25th anniversary of the Fallout franchise.
The announcement comes on the video game franchise's 16th anniversary, Gears of War's 16th anniversary. That first game came out November 7th, 2006. And that's your news for tonight. What do we have, if anything, to drink?
I don't know. Let me get it up. I have a little different, so I'm doing.
Well, while he's doing that, The Dragon Prince, which is an animated on Netflix, season 4 is coming, is out partially. Very good animation, very good story, and it's not dumbed down for kids. It's an adult-level cartoon.
Okay. Our drink, and it's based on Dune. That's why it's The Spice Must Flow. Yeah. And the reason I picked the Dune drink was because you know we're going to talk about Dune tonight because they're so controversial. Dune fans, either most of them, I guess, just hate the movies. It seems like I haven't found a Dune fan that said the movie, especially the 80s 84 movie, was good. So anyway, that is that. So let's get into, if we're ready, the meat of the thing. Books that should be movies. We're going to start with Mary Beth.
Oh, I'm starting. What's the first one? The things that should be
good. So you picked the movie Yes, or the book Yes, rather, by Terry Pratchett.
Yes. No, yeah. Not yes. Any novel. Yeah. The author's name is Terry Pratchett.
Oh, you just
any
that's what novel. You sent me, so that's what I put in the PowerPoint.
Yeah, it's all good.
Because you couldn't seem to narrow down what you
no,
wanted.
No, I couldn't. My choices for books that should be made into movies went on and on and on and on. I chose Rama. You said you got that one. Well, I chose Songs of Distant Earth. I was looking at
alert, but
a bunch of Larry Niven stuff, amazing stuff. And finally, I just said, you know what is easy peasy? Literally any Terry Pratchett piece, and he has
what was
1 million of them.
Huh? Why you wrote Terry Pratchett? Yes, in, when you sent me the message. And it was in capitals like that, so I thought that was the name of the book.
I was answering some other part of your question, I think. this is a bit of a cheat because his novel, one of his books has been made into a movie, Hog's Father. But he's a British author whose tongue is very firmly planted in his cheek. And while it is leaning towards fantasy, it's, you know, there's witches and elves and crap like that and death. This he runs around. He's quite funny. It's that same vein as Douglas Adams. So yeah. If you liked Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you're going to love Terry Pratchett. He does Discworld. He does a ton of stuff. Very, very prolific. Run yourselves right out and buy some Terry Pratchett.
Yep.
Okay. Was that you don't? So we don't have a specific book, just an author.
Yeah, that
makes all Terry's stuff into.
Cheated and recommended an entire author. Which, if I was going to recommend another entire author, well, I mean, I'd put Larry Niven. You guys want Larry?
Yeah, I would probably agree with that, but that wasn't the assignment.
I don't care. I'm giving people understand.
You're getting angry about people not following your directions, and no, you did not follow my directions.
Speaking of options, guys, I just in preparing for tonight, I was getting really sad. I don't read, I realized, nearly as much as I used to for reasons, which is really, really sad. And consequently, all my stuff is like older. Like everything in here, their copyright starts with a 19 something. So if anyone out there would like to recommend for me some of the new sci-fi classics, anything written from 2000 on, I can't see what that is, from 2000 on, I would happily take the recommendation and I will try to read.
Is that what that says? Again.
Murderbot.
I read literally every day because that's my last thing I do before I turn the light off.
Yeah.
To go to bed. So I always read. But so I've been reading. In fact, my Kindle keeps telling me how great I am because I've so many days in a row I've read.
I know, they give you
a little award thing. Everything is like you get an award for something now. You get a little award. But I read a lot of Star Trek novels and now they've come a whole series of Firefly novels. So those are kind of fun. Not deep reading, folks. This is the light stuff. I mean, so there's not a lot going on there. But anyway, they're fun to read. Bed,
that's perfect stuff.
Like I said, right now I'm reading Niven's the Moten God.
Like I don't. If you guys will make recommendations, don't be doing this. I haven't got the brain power anymore.
that's a slug to get through.
That's a heavy one.
Yeah, that's not right. You really got to want to read.
Something. I got Reflection. You guys can't see all my books. Okay, anyway.
I can see it. Okay, going back to, all right, next on our, yes, I got to do this the way I have to do this. There we go. Okay, and no, I don't want to see that. All right, so the next one is Kent, and Kent has Honor Harrington on Basilisk Station.
Right. So.
I got that one right.
Yep, on Basilisk
Station. You followed instructions.
I did. That's the first of a series of about 20 books at this point, plus some assorted other authors who are writing in the same universe. David Weber is a military sci-fi god. He has created a world with what amounts to old-time sailing ship battles. Broadside to broadside, all your guns face to the sides because the front and the rear of the ship are very small. If you run parallel to each other, you get to shoot at each other for a while. If you're moving apart, you don't get to shoot at each other. And Honor Harrington, the namesake of the whole series, is a fledgling starship captain who is assigned to the ass end of nowhere, Basilisk Station, and is forced to deal with geopolitical problems between her country and the other bad guys. And it starts a huge universe. It's staggering how detailed and how far ranging the stories are. Honor Harrington is central to a lot of them, but they've branched off into a dozen different other little microcosms of there's some stuff that's real spy related. There's a heist book. There's all kinds of different stuff that goes on. But Honor Harrington would be eminently filmable. On Basilisk Station is a self-contained story. You don't have to read any of the other stuff. It's got space battles. It's got political intrigue. It's even got some aliens, although aliens are not prevalent in this universe. There's not a lot of intelligent life out there that isn't. But it's amazingly well written. He gets details down. He's amazingly detail oriented in the film. And a high point, there's a six-limbed cats called two cats. That Honor has as a pet, and it named him Nimitz after the Admiral Nimitz from Earth history. So it's an intriguing set of books. I recommend them heartily, but they would make a fantastic anime. I don't know if it's filmable in real world terms because Honor Harrington is 6'6" and a martial arts expert. And
she could be like Bobby on The Expanse.
Yeah, well, she's taller and thinner, but yeah, she's a heavy worlder, so she comes from a planet with higher gravity than Earth.
They just did She-Hulk. They could do whatever they want now.
Yeah,
could. Yeah, I but some of the She-Hulk effects were very.
No, they were a little. They were clearly CGI, but
it is doable. It would be a staggeringly fun series to watch.
Keep in mind, Kent, you know. Yeah, this character's 6 foot tall or whatever, and 6 foot six. But they'll write a screenplay and they'll make it her 6 foot.
They'll make it Angelina Jolie.
You know, whatever fit whatever the actress. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They always adjust everything, and I think that's going to be our next segment is when they do it badly.
Yeah.
So yes, I think I don't know this story, so I don't want to say they could do that. It wouldn't make a difference. Is the height of the person really critical to the story? I'm going to probably say no without reading
she's,
it.
But. Well, she's very physically imposing. So, yeah, right. it does.
But I mean, you can create that without them being 6.5 feet tall.
Right, because they can make Tom Cruise look like he's 6 foot tall.
Right, exactly. You know.
So,
I think they should get Kevin Hart to play that part.
Yes. Yes. I think Kevin Hart is actually taller than Tom Cruise.
He's a little guy.
Yeah, he's a little guy. So heartily recommended. If you haven't read them, start with that on Basilisk Station and you will be hooked.
And who is the author again, Kent?
David Weber, W-E-B-E-R, like the grill. He's prolific as well. He's got dozens of other universes that he's written in, but this one would lend itself very strong to a great series of movies. Okay. Hey, hi.
Hello, Kitty.
Hello.
Hi, Kitty. All right. Hey, I just want to kind of going back. Martin had asked if there's going to be a Dune sequel. Yes, I believe they are going to have a part two.
Yes.
The most current one because they only told half the story in the last Zendaya.
And it's been argued, should they have made this into a movie or should they?
Yeah, we can talk about that in the next segment.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
So it's Dr. Alexander likes your choice, Kent.
He is a
David Weber fan. So all right, moving on. All right. Click. Bruce. Frederick Pohl, Gateway. You also followed instructions.
Gateway. great book. Gateway is
familiar with it.
Yeah, if people don't know it, basically in the near future. Earth has found remnants of an alien civilization called the Hechi. And they don't understand the language. They're not quite sure what they look like. They don't understand the technology. So we're sort of really trying to scrape along with what we can find from this millennia's dead civilization. And the one thing they find is this transportation hub called that they call Gateway. A Gateway has thousands of starships on it, and they seat between, I think it's 2 and 5 people. And it's really cool because they've sort of worked out how these ships work. I mean, they can press go and they can press come back. But besides that, they really don't have any capability of controlling it. So a corporation has taken over Gateway and basically runs it that you can buy your way onto Gateway and you can volunteer to go on one of these ships. Now, sometimes the ships go to a world that they thought about colonizing or were exploring, and there's nothing there. You can go to another Hechi colony where they can find all sorts of technology. Or you can end up, well, you know, remember where the solar system was? There's now a black hole. So they have no way of really gauging the level of danger of any of these trips. And, you know, sometimes they don't estimate well how long the trip's going to be, and they just die because they don't have air or food and supplies. So it's really interesting. And the best way I have of describing the tension in the novel is if you think about going skydiving, you logically can get yourself to the place, pay your fee, get your parachute on, but it's an entirely different story when you're up in the airplane and they open the door. And yeah. This whole novel is driven in that moment. Yep. You know, the hero has made his way onto the station and now has to decide, does he get on one of these transports and go someplace? You know, he's paid a fantastic amount of money to be there. Some people decide no. Some people set up shop. They you know, have little restaurants or something on Gateway. Some people go and are, you know, lose a limb or something like that or whatever. So it's all the heroes.
Or far worse.
I mean, they die. Some die. Yeah. So it's the whole thing is a real bottle type setup. It all takes place on the station, I think the majority, or in one of the little transports. There's not a lot to it, but what a movie it could be made if it was made with someone with a real vision, not a corporate studio or something like that, but who could keep that emotion going. It would be really, really cool.
That's a great analogy.
It's a good point.
Skydiver.
Yeah. You know, the Lottie's films or books, I should say, is yes, they would make good movies, but they have to be done the right way.
Yeah, the movie would have to capture that. This is a great choice, Bruce. A great choice, this book. The movie would have to capture that certain, God, there's an emotional tension, like a desperation and the fear of not knowing if you were going to come back wildly rich or smeared all over the inside of the ship.
Yeah. Like, that's true. You came back like that. That's right.
Yeah. I don't know if that's capturable. I don't know if the feeling is capturable. I mean, I guess, I don't know. It's very Grapes of Wrathy, that desperation. Yeah,
the other thing that's cool is they do a lot of correlation versus causality. You know, they know the five-person ones tend to come back more, but they come back with nothing. The two-person ones are riskier. They don't come back quite as often, but boy, when they come back, they've got something. So there's all of this. And the fact is, we have way too many movies out there where we understand the technology, we understand the language, we understand the motivation, and that's not in this.
These guys are using alien technology that they don't understand. That's the crux of it. So great pick. Great choice. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. Okay.
Have you read that one, Rizzo?
No. That's another one. I'm going to put it on my list.
Put it on your list.
Sequels.
Interesting.
Yeah, there was what, 6? Hechi Rendezvous?
Beyond the Blue Event and the Hechi, the Annals of the Hechi. I think there's also the Hechi Saga.
Hechi Rendezvous, isn't it?
There's 4.
4, okay.
And I just wanted to call out, Martin came up with the Old Man's War. I haven't read that. It is now on my list because I asked a friend what would he recommend, and he said Old Man's War. It sounds really cool. Really? It's not like the tales of the early pioneers that went across the Midwest, because they understood how far they were going. They understood the technology of what they're being transported in. This is, you get in, you get all the supplies that you think you need, and you hit go, and where you end up, who knows? Whether you're on a 4-month trip and you've had supplies for 3 months, who knows? So it's a real gamble. It's really tossing yourself out of that airplane.
Yeah.
Sounds more risky than that, because, you know, parachute technology is pretty proven. And
okay. Let's say I pack a parachute myself, okay?
Yeah, that's probably more risky. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's like jumping out of an airplane with a parachute, never having been in an airplane before.
Mm. Yep.
See, I'm the guy that says, why jump out of a perfectly good airplane?
Perfectly good airplane, yeah.
All right. Are we moving on then? We've covered that one. All right. So the next one obviously is myself. And as kind of we already slipped, I'm doing Arthur C. Clarke, Rendezvous with Rama. This is probably my favorite Clarke book, and I love Clarke. Some of his stuff has, of course, already been made. 2001 Space Odyssey is probably his most well-known. Of course, he wrote that to be a movie. The other one that is fairly well known of his that's been made into films is Childhood's End. Childhood's End has been made, I think, at least twice, different versions. I think the most current one, Sci-Fi Channel did it a few years back as a miniseries. It was a pretty good adaptation of the book. The problem with Clarke in general is he likes to leave things kind of hanging or just unknown. He doesn't explain everything at the end of his books. He leaves you, which I actually like, because that mystery, that level of mystery, you don't ever see the alien kind of thing, leaves your imagination to do wherever it wants as far as what the answer is. So those of you who have never read this book, and shame on you if you haven't, this is basically what the story is. Of course, it's in the future, several hundred years, I believe. We, of course, colonized the entire solar system. And somebody basically starts to, one of the astronomers sees what he believes is a comet coming into the solar system. And it turns out it's starting to change course and slow down. And it is a massive cylinder. We're talking like kilometers long. That is
that's miles for those of you in the US.
Well, they use kilometers in the book. So I'm sticking with the metric system on this one, which will be on by 1980, just so you know. The US anyway. So anyway, they land on this thing. Because Clarke is one of the best science fiction writers, because his science is usually spot on. He doesn't fudge with the science. So because of space is big, really big. You don't think it really is. Sorry, just a little Hitchhiker's Guide.
Hitchhiker's reference there.
The only ship they had available was basically a ship that, you know, was in the area. So these guys are tasked to land. They're not prepared in any way to do an expedition of this kind, but that's the only ones that are near. They land on the thing. They get inside it. It's a giant city that is completely, of course, frozen over because it's been in interstellar space. And they explore this thing, and eventually it starts to wake up. Nobody really seems to still be living on it. And ultimately it leaves the solar system, and they have to leave before it does. And we don't really know why it was there. They don't know. They don't never find out why the ship is there or why it came into their solar system. The thing I think is he does such a great job of describing the interior of Rama, which is what they call this spacecraft. And when you read the book, you really can picture what these guys are seeing. At least I did. I mean, like in my imagination, he does such a good job of describing everything. And there's not a ton of action in it. There are a few suspenseful parts, you know, of the book where there's tension and you don't know what's going to happen. And is this guy going to die? Is he not going to die? That kind of thing. But there's no action. There's no aliens they're fighting. There's no battles, that kind of thing. But so that's why I say this one with an asterisk next to it, because to do this movie right, it's going to end up more like 2001, I think, where it's not quite as slow as that one, but I think it needs to be done they need to focus on Rama itself and not so much the actors that are exploring Rama, if that makes any sense.
Right.
So you guys have all read like passed to V'ger by the Enterprise, right? Sort of like that.
Yeah.
If V'ger came and went and never really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing with Rama is again, these things happen as it gets closer to our sun, it warms up and then things start to happen. And that's what kind of spurs on the story as to what changes. Of course, when they first get in there, for instance, again, if you haven't read the book, I'm sorry, there's spoilers. When they first enter the space into Rama, it's completely dark. So it's pitch black. They have some searchlights. They can see a certain distance, but of course not kilometers. I think it's like 20 kilometers long or something like that, or at least wide. And then all of a sudden, like, as a thing, all of a sudden, all these lights come on, like it's daylight in there, you know, that kind of thing. Like, so as the ship gets closer to the sun, it starts to wake up, and you keep expecting, oh, we're going to see the aliens are going to come out of hibernation or something, but it never happens. So there are subsequent, there's Rama 2, and I forgot what the third book is called. No.
I
hate when they do this on these type of books, because they start explaining by the third book, they've explained so much about Rama and why it's there.
Here's Rama 2, if you guys, this is,
yeah, Rama 2, another one comes in and actually a family stays on it and goes, so they go with it out to wherever it's going to go to.
Garden of Rama and Rama Revealed.
Rama, yes, thank you. You.
So there's four books. Just read the first one. Yeah. If you haven't read it, just read the first. Because I think what happened was Arthur C. Clarke in his later years started to co-write with Gentry Lee. And I think it was more Gentry Lee than it was Arthur, quite frankly. There were some good collaborations. They wrote some other good books together that I thought were good. But I don't know if this is really the one. We talked about 2001 and then 2010, which was a good sequel. I think 2010 was a proper sequel for the 2001, but I think they went off the rails with 2060. I think it is.
Yeah, 2061.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my feeling on this particular book.
And then there was a fourth one, 3001.
Yeah, I think you're right. I read them all and was like kind of regretting reading them all, especially after 10. And I think I read because 10 went almost right to the movie, right? I think
it was very close.
It was almost again written as a screenplay.
Yeah.
So, and it was done well. The film was good, I thought. Which we did on the show. So if you want to see our comments on that, you can go back in time on Facebook and find that one. So that's the. Do you guys have any comments on this particular one? I'm pretty sure everybody's read it.
Not on Rama, but we should get to the comments section. They're making some fantastic recommendations in the comments section.
Oh.
I think Rendezvous with Rama would make a good mini series.
Yeah, it'd have to be like a whole mini series, I think. Just the first one, just Rama. We don't need to do the other one.
We don't need to know why.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, you can read them if you're really, really into it. But I was really excited when they came out with the following books, because I'm like, oh, good, more Rama. But after, I was like, it's explained too much. I don't want to know.
And you know what? It's the same with Gateway. It's the same with Bruce's pick, Gateway. In the first book, they describe the seating, which was meant for the aliens, and you can't figure out what these aliens look like. Just describe, you know, the way the seats are. And then in the second and third book, they figure out what the aliens look like, and you're like, oh, and somehow the magic and the mystery is taken away. Like, you know, it was better when we didn't know. Sue, I really second that. Yes, the stainless steel rat.
Yeah,
one of my favorite series. Inherit the Stars, amazing. Yeah, and
check out. There's probably a lot of good books out there that would probably make good good screenplay.
Like I said at the top of the show, I am looking for a
reference. Now, Rama, I will say, was optioned. And it was in the early 2000s. They were working on it. It's actually optioned by, I can't think of the actor's name. We all know him. The black guy, great voice. Everybody wants him to narrate. No.
Morgan Freeman.
The guy that used to be on The Electric Company.
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, Morgan
Freeman. He has the option for it. Of course, with his, he's aging, and so it's probably never going to get made, at least unless somebody, you know, picks it up off of him and runs it.
That might end up in our should not have been made pile because they're going to Hollywood it. They're going to make a battle.
They're gonna add some action to it.
That's not what it's about. It's not about action.
That's why I said asterisk next to that one, because although I think it would make a great movie, it would take somebody with the vision to create the interior of Rama with the same splendor and detail that Clark wrote it. In other words, when you read it, you understand, like, the way he describes where things are, because remember, we're talking about a cylinder. So the cities and everything is kind of built, or whatever they are. They never did identify what all these structures were that are built on the inside of this cylinder, you know, and they're at one end, they come in at the one end, and then there's what they believe is the drive section down at the other end. That's the other thing they get into, the stuff they called space drive, which is kind of interesting in this book. Which was a theory that basically it was a non-reactive drive system. So in other words, no jets, no propulsion that we're used to, you know, the physics equal, you know, one action equal opposite reaction, that somehow this thing uses gravity or whatever to propel itself. They call it a space drive because as it's theoretical, and clearly Rama must have it because it doesn't have any rocket nozzles or anything.
Right. And it was able to change course.
And yet it was able to change course and adjust its spin. And it, of course, it was rotating to create gravity. All that stuff. It's a great book if you haven't read it. Highly recommend. It's also available on audiobook if you choose to do that.
Are we getting now off the books that should be movies? Because I'd like to do one.
We are now going to move to the books that should not have been made into movies.
Can I just make one recommendation more on the books that should be made into movies? And that is The Murderbot Diaries. Okay?
The Murderbot?
Murderbot Diaries. And this is a series. It won the Hugo and Nebula back in 2017. So, Mary Beth, as you said, it's more recent. The first ones are novellas, and then they get into longer works. But this is one of the greatest characters that has come out in recent science fiction. This is basically, the best way of describing it is a Terminator. So it's a bot with organic components. And in this universe, you know, we've expanded out into the wild blue yonder, and when you are going to explore a world or you're going to do something, you need financing. And one of the things that they say that you require as part of your financing is a security unit or other different supplies. So this thing's a commodity. So it gets shipped in a crate, it comes out, but this particular security unit has had a trauma. He was forced to kill a whole bunch of people, and he decided to rebel by disabling his governor circuit. And so now he's freelance, but basically this is a character study of your typical introvert. So we've all got that in ourselves as sci-fi geeks, but it is the most wonderful, complete character that you've ever seen. But he's a bot. He's not a real person. He views himself as a commodity, but you know, what does he do with his life? This is what he was programmed to do. Should he do it freelance? Does he have other things to do? And, you know, his favorite thing is downloading media and binge watching shows to understand the world.
Okay. It just needs to be
a very difficult thing to do, but I think it would really be good. It's cool.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good honorable mentions. I love Lost Fleet by, oh God, what the hell's his name? I can't think of his name now. But anyway, Jack Campbell. Sorry. great, would make great movie, but I don't, yeah, I almost would have almost picked that. Anyway, moving on, I want to, because I went on, I was only, we got 20 minutes left. I want to make sure we have, because I think this is probably going to take longer than the.
Oh, so, no, some of these are no-brainers.
Books that should not be movies. We're going to start, we'll go with Barry Best again. And, of course, we have Madeline England's A Wrinkle in Time. Why do you think this was a bad movie?
I waffled on this a lot, guys. I thought about doing Foundation, but and I really thought about Ender's Game, and we can talk about Ender's Game if there's time. But Wrinkle in Time, they've taken a couple stabs at this. They've done it a couple times. It never captured. And it never captures the spirit of the book. And I think that's what each and every one of us is going to say as we go through our book choices.
I'll be honest with you. I've not seen the film, The Wrinkle in Time.
Read the book.
Yeah.
The book.
No, I'm familiar with the book.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think all of us are going to say the movie did not capture this essence, this certain something about the book. And this one, they've yet to do it right. So I know we're running short, so I'll let
it go. No. I mean, we got that. You could go more than a minute.
No. the problem is the themes that run through this book maybe cannot be captured on film. I don't know. The general thrust of the book, that love, and particularly familial love in this book, but that love can conquer everything. It never quite, like, they say it. They'll say it in the movie, the couple different movies that have been tried, but it.
So what is it you think that they're missing, or how they're missing the mark?
They Hollywoodify it.
Well, they, I think that's going to be the theme for pretty much.
That's what we're all going to say. There's an essence that they're not capturing, and they it's too big and glamorous, and they change the character. I don't care that they change the character if she still captures the gist of what the main character does in this book, but they've yet to do it.
They missed the mark.
They missed the mark.
You know, I think part of this too is we read these books and we love them for whatever reason, and we find something in them that speaks to us.
You internalize it.
You internalize it, but you feel you have ownership to it.
Yeah.
You read
how dare they mess up
whatever it is that, like I said, speaks to you, and you lock into that. And when the film does not produce that same feeling or does not hit that mark that you feel is what is the focal point of that book, then you feel they failed. Yes. Somebody else may have watched these, and I don't know what the reviews were on the latest Wrinkle in Time film, if it did well or not. Again, I didn't see it. It's not something that I would probably go out to see anyway. But
Rizzo is absolutely right. I have read this particular copy of this book easily 50 times, if not more. And so, yes, Rizzo's absolutely right. Now, had I been someone who had never seen this book and just sat down and watched the movie for the first time, okay, maybe.
And again, we have to always keep in mind that Hollywood is going for the main, they're shotgunning. They want to hit the most.
They're going for the money. They want money.
They want to hit as many people. And they know that the general public is not nerdy like us, you know, on average. So they want a certain level of action. They want to be spoon-fed a certain level of information, and they want visuals that are going to impress them.
But sometimes all they're going for is brand recognition.
I agree with you. They're right. Sometimes they just really miss the mark, which is just
my choice. Is that exactly?
And they don't even care. At that, Ender's Game was a good example. You know, you had
Harrison Ford played. Yeah.
And I didn't read the book, and I saw the movie, and I just like, this is just.
Oh, the book rocked the book world.
See, that's funny because I thought the whole premise of the book was.
You think of Orson Scott Card as a person, and we don't like Orson Scott Card as a person, his conceit for this book was clever AF.
Magnificent.
Yeah.
It was a clever conceit.
Yeah.
I will give him that.
Yep.
So in the book, I kept waiting for the big reveal in the movie. I kept waiting for it and waiting for it and waiting for it, and it just didn't have the impact.
It trickled off at the end. It's like, really? What?
At the end, you're like, oh, okay.
Oh, we're the bad guys.
I guess they won.
All right, I've taken up too much time. Someone else talk.
You're fine. We're good. All right, next up, Robert Heinlein, Starship Troopers. I think we all have some opinions on Starship Troopers. I think
we do.
The biggest problem, and I think you'll probably agree with Starship Troopers, is the book and the movie were had very few things in common.
Wait, it's brand.
I mean, it had like the right exactly universe.
What you just said, it was brand recognition. They had the name. They bought the rights to it. It started out as a script for some other bug movie.
But think about it. Yeah.
Verhaven slapped Heinlein's name on it, and it's a travesty.
The thing is,
what Mary Beth said is exactly true. Had I seen that movie without loving the book and knowing the book, it would have been a great popcorn movie.
See, now here's the thing. I read the book and then I saw the movie. I can't say I love the book. I was okay with it. There was no love there.
Okay.
But when you read that book is not an action book. It's
new.
It's all about commentary.
And commentary on really modern politics.
Yeah.
And that's the one where he introduces the concept of punishing the parents for the kids. Is that book or is it another one of his?
No, that's different. Is basically the one concept I think that came out of this book, which was interesting, was you are not a citizen unless you serve in the military.
Yes.
They brought not that in. Service brings citizenship, so guarantee citizenship. They kept saying
right.
That. The war with the bugs in the book was just like the sideline thing happening,
right?
Propelling the story of the main character.
And
but it really wasn't the focus of the book.
No, it was a seminal book for me because it was the first Heinlein that I read that wasn't one of his juvenile series. He had a series of books about young kids who go on space adventures, and I ate that stuff up when I was a kid. Starship Troopers is the first adult Heinlein that I read, and his political views hit me between the eyes like a sledgehammer. It was incredibly powerful.
I was the same way, Kent, because I was studying economics at the time, and it generated thoughts. I didn't always agree with it, but it generated a lot of thoughts.
Yep, it's a very thought-provoking book. It's been labeled everything from fascist to socialist to communist to he's gotten all the ists and isms. They slapped him with every ism and ist you can think of because he wrote that book the way he wrote it. And Verhaven is on record saying he hadn't read the book before he started making the movie. And then he read the book and hated it. So the guy making the movie with the name Starship Troopers slapped on it, didn't read it, and then hated it once he read it. And that's...
Hated the film or hated the book?
No, hated the book. Yeah. He made the film. He loves the film. The film is...
Let's look at this and just break that down, because you're right. I think if we had made this film and it was not based on or allegedly based on the book, it's not that bad a movie as far as, like you say, a popcorn movie.
That's what Mary Beth said, and I agree with
it. The acting is weak at best, with the exception of the few people that we know are veterans. Michael Ironside, Doogie Howser in there,
Brown.
Yeah, Clancy Brown, and the two main characters, Rico and his love interest there, whatever her name was. Let's face it, probably couldn't act their ways out of a bag, but
no,
that really wasn't the point.
They were pretty faces, and
the special effects were interesting, the bugs were interesting, the battles were interesting. But you're right. As a supposed to be a adaptation of the book, it was, what am I watching? If you read the book, if you're expecting to see, but like I said, I don't think that if they had done it like the book, it wouldn't have sold jack. Because I don't think the general audiences would have.
Which is why I said it doesn't.
Not in its current form as a book. It would not. I don't think it made a good movie.
Yeah, so, all right. Very little of Heinlein, I think.
Yeah, you got to put up Jeff's comment there. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you're probably right, Jeff. They weren't. what was the girl? She did some other stuff.
Denise Richards.
Denise Richards. And I don't even know what the other guy did after that. He was like just a pretty face.
Casper Van Diem. He was on, was it One Tree Hill or something?
Yeah, there was like I said, those actors around those two. Friday were Night Lights pretty or something. Good. You know, we had a
the supporting actors.
There's actually some good actors in there, but yeah, it was just those two are just not good.
Doogie Howser is a Nazi scientist.
Yeah, he's dressed as a Nazi. They just had that look.
Yeah, well, that was their point.
Well, that was the only thing the Nazis got right. They had good uniforms. They looked good.
Yeah, yeah.
Beyond that, everything else was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, all right. Any more?
And they made the trains run on time.
What's that? They made the trains. Well, the Japanese got that done too, and they didn't have to, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Invade the world. All right, moving on. Anything last call? No. Okay, Bruce, you're up next. And of course, we're doing Dune.
Dune.
Obviously, okay. You do not like the 80. Was it 84?
Yeah, I am. I will start off by saying I am a huge Dune fan. I read all the way up to Chapter House as soon as they hit the market. Tremendous. If you know, people always ask, if you had a time machine, what would you do? Where would you go back? I would buy 10 copies of Dune. I would go back in time, and I would hand them out to the director and producers of the 1984 film and say, please read this before you do it. It is just, it's so not the book. I think that they did a much better job with the sci-fi miniseries, and I love the new version. I love the new movie, the Denis Villeneuve movie. Holy smokes, can't wait for the sequel.
Yeah, but I think what the problem with the 84 film was they had a lot of backstory explanation of why things were happening.
Well, it depends on what version you see too, because one of them had an extended cartoony thing at the front of it.
No, I've never seen that version. But even the regular version, the theatrical version,
was very explained. I think
it stretched it out too much.
I could accept that. But things like the Weirding Way, which was just basically modern martial arts, things like the voice was never a weapon, a sonic weapon of some sort. A
device, yeah.
It wasn't never a device. It, you know, all of these things were just wrong. And I mean, the whole idea of this is an ecological balance, and this is a world, and if you want the spice to flow, you got to let other things happen, and all of that. And I mean, just... holy smokes. I can't even count the number of things they got right in the film.
Yeah, very few.
I think, again, this is a book that's kind of political. It's about these different houses and how they're battling.
It's about OPEC is what it's about.
And I think it's hard to make that, again, a film. The remake, the current remake, there was actually one prior to this one, the current one.
The Sci-Fi Channel miniseries.
Sci-Fi Channel did one.
Did a
miniseries. Is that the one you're referring to or the most current one?
The Sci-Fi one I thought was passable. I enjoyed that. The Denis Villeneuve movie that just came out is brilliant.
Timothée Chalamet.
It shows how bad the 84 movie was because they can do it.
The issue I had with the most current one was, and I read the first book, that was the only one I read. Having known the book, I kind of was able to follow, but I think the average person that was just coming into it would have been a little lost at times with it because they didn't really explain why the spice was important. At least I missed it somewhere in there that they need this for travel, interstellar travel.
It's also a geriatric drug. People live a lot longer because they have the spice.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the primary was that the navigators needed it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. My wife followed it. She's never read the book. I've known other people who've followed it.
It's not a huge problem. I just think it was something I noted.
But
watching it,
what Bruce is saying is the same thing I basically said about Wrinkle. They didn't capture the mood and the tone and the feeling,
right?
And
the political wheels within wheels
that they didn't capture.
Yep.
In making this transition from page to screen.
I mean the whole setup in Dune is brilliant from a tactical point of view. The Emperor has two popular houses; they're becoming too popular. Set them on each other. Let them play one against
the other.
Yeah, again, it's very political. It's similar to to kind of what you see in Asimov's Foundation. I don't think they did it as, I think Asimov's version, so to speak, was a little bit more clever of how they went about it. But I mean, that's just my opinion. Of course, it doesn't mean anything. But yeah, I agree. They can't seem like a, you know, the old quote, like a poor marksman, they keep missing the target. I think they're getting better. Like I said, I think the last one was probably the best.
Well, like I said, I view it as it becomes obvious that they miss the target when someone has hit the target. And to me, yeah, the most recent movie hit the target.
That's something I'd like to see a reboot done of. Starship, if they rebooted Starship Troopers or remade it and did it right.
See, I don't think they could do it, Kent. I don't think they could do it and make it interesting.
Because Hollywood thinks, rightly or wrongly, Hollywood thinks that people don't want to watch a story about political stuff. They want to watch action, people shooting bugs.
That's just it. Well, again, they're in the business to make money. So the way they make money is get the most people they can into the seats to watch the film.
And Joseph Beck is ready.
This was really, if you ever, have you watched on Paramount, they have The Offer. The movie is a series, miniseries called The Offer. And it's about the making of The Godfather and what they went through.
I want to watch that.
And one of the things that came up was the length of the film. There was a huge argument about the fact that the film was almost 3 hours long, which nowadays we say that and we're like, oh, it's a Marvel movie. But, you know, back in the 70s, they were like, hey, you know what? And they're thinking about it from a business perspective. You know, you got this. That means we can only have so many showings a day because we got to change over the theater and add the people.
Three showings.
So we can only have three again. So they're thinking from a straight money, how many people can we get into those seats to see that film? Now, the film was a massive success, as we know. So it turned out and probably opened the door for other films to meet.
Yeah, look at Titanic. Titanic ran
to break that 90 minute. Back then, I think 90 minutes, you know, between two hours was considered long. So, I mean, that's what I think, you know, you have to look at Hollywood, put everything in that perspective. Hollywood just wants asses in seats. They don't care.
The flip side of that now, with streaming and all the independent creators, there is room to do a movie right that doesn't necessarily put asses in seats.
Yeah, but it still has to have ROI.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But some art should just be made because it's art.
Yeah, well, that's what they have, I guess.
It's art house films.
Cannes Film Festival. So.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, Dune, the current Dune is a whole lot closer to the book. It hits some of the political maneuvering dead on that they just ignored in the first movie. And it doesn't have Sting in it.
I didn't think Sting was that bad.
Oh, God. Compared to the Fade Ralpha in the book, though? Come on.
I guess I'm a Sting fan. I just like Sting usually. So what can I say? I think it wasn't great. I mean, he's not getting an Academy Award.
It's Strax. What's his name? David Bautista.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
He's not a good singer though.
No. Up against Sting, he'd be slaughtered.
I will.
Him and Stellan Skarsgård, who's in every single movie ever made.
Right.
Stellan's everywhere you want to be. I mean, he's just
all right, so we're gonna move on, but I will make one plug for that. If you have not seen that The Offer on Paramount, watch it.
I'm gonna watch it.
Miniseries, and you will want to go watch The Godfather. If you haven't seen The Godfather, I don't want to know you.
Yeah, but, right. Yeah. Who are you anyway?
Who are you? Right. Okay. So my pick was Michael Crichton's Sphere. I read this book, I loved this book. I thought I read it. And I'm like, this would make such a good movie. I gave it to my wife. I said, made her read it. She's like, yes, this is great. It was suspenseful.
Absolutely.
It was Crichton's, some of his best. If you like Jurassic Park, it was all along that kind of kept you going. It was page turner. You know, I finished it in record time. Like I think I did when I read Jurassic Park, but it was long before it was a film. I think I read that book in like a few days. Like you just literally couldn't put it down. It was
blew right through.
That's what this was. And decades later, I don't know how many when they made Sphere, I was like, oh great, they're gonna finally make this into a film, and what a stinker! The cast was all star, but wrong. It's been particularly Dustin Hoffman as your lead character. Love Dustin Hoffman. He's a phenomenal actor, as we know. Totally wrong for this role. Just totally wrong. The basis of the book, if you've never heard it, is they find a spacecraft at the bottom of very deep, at the bottom of the ocean. And it's way more advanced than anything modern. So they know it must be alien. So they send an expedition team very, very deep. Of course, you know, it's just like kind of like the abyss. You know, they're that
the abyss or Deep Star Six.
Yeah. They're down there, and they discover, again, this is a spoiler alert. They discover that when they get to the hatch, that it has an American flag on the ship, and they realize that it's not an alien ship, but it's probably from the future, and so. And then weird things start happening, and that's where I'll leave it. It's kind of almost like What Did We Do in some similar ways. It has kind of the feel of Event Horizon, kind of in a way, because they find something on board.
I think more like Fantastic Planet.
I mean, I'm just saying. Regardless, it's a great book. Read the book. And this is kind of Crichton. Crichton he'll have a book that's phenomenal and one that's just it seems like great.
And then Crichton adaptations do the same too.
Right. Same thing. Rising Sun is a magnificent novel. It is a fantastic book. The movie, even though it's got Connery in it, and it's okay. The movie is nothing compared to the book.
Yeah. So I recommend this book if you really want something that's gonna capture your interest, and it's kind of a little bit thought provoking, but it's pretty much an action book. I mean, it's a lot along the lines of Jurassic Park. That's how it's Crichton. If you know Crichton books, they move along very quick pace. They keep you in engaged. You want to find out what happens. And it would have made a great book, a movie, had they done it right.
Right.
And it just, I don't know what it was, because it also had Samuel Jackson and Sharon Stone. Again, you know, at the time, pretty well-known actors, not even at the time, currently. And it just, something didn't work. I don't think Sharon Stone was a good pick either for that character.
There was no chemistry in it at all.
I mean, I think that's a really good observation. There was not any chemistry. And like I said, did you see Dustin Hoffman as that lead character? What in the hell? He was just too old, and I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at. I just brought it up on Google, and they're showing me the cast. And Lee Schreiber as Dr. Anything kind of scares me.
I don't know what they were thinking with this one. If it was just a money grab.
I think Crichton sold the rights to make a buck, and then the studio said, "Well, we've got a Crichton thing, and he's big off of Jurassic Park. Let's slap his name all over this."
Yeah, Bruce, you got the what year was this made?
98.
Okay, so it was 90. So yeah, well, I wouldn't say it's fresh off of Jurassic Park, because we know the subsequent Jurassic Park movies were not good.
Right. He didn't
Lost
write
Lost World, which was the sequel to Jurassic Park. Was a good book in and itself,
but they didn't
nearly as good as the first one. But if you read that book and then you went and saw the film The Lost World, this is not the same story almost at all.
At all,
yeah. But if you look at it and say, you know, look at the timeline, Jurassic Park was 93, so 5 years later to get
You know, Crichton, like you said, all the way back to when the original Andromeda Strain, you know, the 70 was 71, which was a great movie.
Yes.
In itself. And it still holds up, in my opinion.
One of my favorite.
Love that movie.
Quote unquote fantasy.
I remember watching as a kid being scared.
He wrote 13th Warrior.
And then of course Jurassic Park, which is phenomenal. And then this book was great.
He did Westworld. He did Congo. You guys remember Congo? He did Timeline.
Which was not a bad movie, but the book is fantastic.
The man is prolific. Another one of these prolific, prolific, prolific writers.
Yeah, and a lot of his stuff ends up being films. And not all of it.
I think he writes in that.
The bulk more. There's probably more bad than good out of his films.
I don't know. I think he's reasonably reliable. I think when Crichton cranks out a new novel, Hollywood.
I think his novels, yes. But when they get, when I'm talking about when they get transferred to film,
it's similar to King. I mean, he's as prolific as King, practically.
Yeah, he's as similar to King. He's prolific.
But look at how many great Stephen King movies there were.
How many?
A lot.
He wrote Twister. I mean, not King.
Stephen King, well, like Christine, Cujo, Pet Sematary.
Cujo is a movie that wasn't great.
The one with Jack Nicholson there.
Shining.
Shining.
Right, The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give you The Shining. Cujo was not great.
It was okay. Christine was okay. Good. Oh, come on. Christine was good.
Yeah, but the book is way better.
But the films, they did well.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Carrie was a good one.
Carrie, of course.
Yeah. Carrie was fantastic. Yeah.
It.
I love Maximum Overdrive.
Firestarter sucked.
Maximum Overdrive was just a short story.
Yeah, Firestarter, absolutely.
Misery, Firestarter was not a good adaptation.
Misery was good. Misery. The Lawnmower Man.
Lawnmower Man
was not good.
He's credited
for Running Man. Why? Who else wrote Running Man?
Running Man was a short.
He wrote it as Richard Bachman. It was a short
story. I think it was a short story, too. It wasn't a full.
Pet Cemetery.
So I think King probably gets the win on
Needful Things was not a bad movie, but it's not as good as the book.
Firestarter sucked. That was terrible.
My only point with bringing up King was the fact that he is not consistent either. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
I think prolific does not mean consistent. You can't blame the original author for the movie being bad because generally they don't have a lot of control.
Right. The one with Idris Elba, Gunslinger, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
That was Dark Tower.
Yeah.
Dark Tower.
Well, I mean, another good example, again, going back to The Godfather, is one of, I think, the reasons it was so good is the author was writing the screenplay along with Francis Ford Coppola.
Yes. Puzo.
So Mario
Puzo.
Yeah, Mario Puzo. So you kind of, and even he was in over his head because he'd never written a screenplay.
Same thing for Jaws. Peter Benchley helped with the screenplay.
Right, Peter Benchley. Now, if you read Jaws as a book, is a very good book, and it's different than the movie.
It is different than the movie. But
pretty
the
much
movie
the is. Only one that lives is Brody.
Right.
So there are some differences there. So anyway, we are way past the hour.
We're way over, yeah.
So I knew we were going to do that. That's why
it's bonus content.
Well, yeah. Blame Bruce because he went on 10 minutes off his second pick there. So you know,
blame Canada is what you're saying?
So Bruce did not follow instructions on that one.
Blame.
And Mary Beth didn't follow instructions coming in. So
yeah, no, I'm totally. Gonna everybody look. Just totally just.
I went, no, I did follow instructions. Someone can't read. It says Wrinkle in Time for no and Terry Pratchett for yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Terry Pratchett is an author. I mean, it's not a book. It's not an actual book. It's just an author.
You should have said, hey, why did you pick an author, not a book?
I was in a hurry. I was also
and
working.
We could have discussed
have
it.
Children. Don't make me stop this car.
While trying to put this together. Of course, I had to bug her. She's like, I don't know. I'm going to wing it.
Look at all my beloved books. You guys can see the pile. I've got 20 books stacked.
You all have that. You're not alone.
They're my babies. I love them.
I think you're right about Niven. A lot of his stuff would make great screen stuff.
I don't know. I'd be curious to know if any of his stuff has been optioned.
Oh, yes, it is. Ringworld has been optioned.
They took a short story called The Slaver Weapon and made an animated Star Trek series episode about it. He rewrote that for that animated series. So, yes, he has been made into film.
He worked with David Gerald, who's done a ton of stuff. So, anyway, all right.
Wrap this. We're wrapped up here. What does Roy got going on?
I don't know. He hasn't said yet. Phil, what's Friday night? He's talking to Candace Knight of Blackmore's Night on the Friday Night Freeform. And I will be joining him to talk some Star Trek set tour. And I will talk a little She-Hulk. Maybe if I can get... there's a new Weird Al Yankovic. Daniel Radcliffe just did the new Weird Al Yankovic
biopic,
movie.
Yeah.
If I can get the biopic, if I can get that washed, we might talk about that. And then next week, he'll replay the Candace Knight interview and the part two of his Evership interview. Us, Rizzo, what are we doing?
Roy says no show Friday.
Roy says no show Friday.
I don't know. What are we? Do you have the list? And I never.
I wrote that. Total Recall, but I wrote Total Recall, ?
The new one or the old one or compare and contrast?
Do we have to? We already did. We just did that. It was a lot of work.
Did that with Dread.
Dread.
I don't. The new Total Recall movie is not worth reviewing.
I agree.
I think I agree.
So if we want to do the Schwarzenegger one, where do we have the apes?
Oh, apes I have on the What do I have on the 24th? Hang on, I'll tell you where apes are. I wrote apes on the 7th, December 7th. What did I write?
Oh, Arbor Day.
Total Recall next week. Oh, and then on the 23rd, the day before Thanksgiving, we watch so you don't have to. Movies that we do not recommend. And our review is you don't have to.
Yeah, don't watch these.
Don't watch these.
We watched
the entire
them.
Hour watch of crap. So no different than any other night, really.
Yes. Oh. So prepare for we'll get you ready for your turkey. So okay. So that wraps it up. We will see you next week, probably with Total Recall, unless I change my mind. I don't know.
Yeah. And then the very next day we're
off to see Mr. Right. William.
And then we're off to see the wizard. Yep.
We're off to see the wizard, yep.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Kent. Thank you, Mary Beth, of course, for coming on and all your suggestions and topics on this. If you guys like this type of thing, let us know. We'll do more. I can always come up with more stupid things to argue about. Well, there really wasn't a lot of arguing. We pretty much agreed.
There's no arguing. We all agreed.
Yeah, yeah, I think we all agreed. Maybe we need more. We need more controversial stuff.
We need more nerd arguments.
The only thing we argued about was the format.
Yes. Can werewolves swim?
Can werewolves swim?
I think we did that. We did
it. Hey, if a vampire bursts into flames when he's exposed to sunlight and he walks outside during a full moon at night, since that's reflected sunlight, does he then burst into flames and die?
Nah, he just smolders a little.
I don't know. I don't think so.
That's a poser.
They've covered that in the films. They've had Bela Lugosi outside with a full moon because he had the werewolves, remember?
Right, but
he did not burn up. I think it has to be direct sunlight.
The distillery.
You're trying to apply science to something that is supernatural. You see?
Vampirism exists. As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. That's right. One of the funniest moments on television ever.
Everybody go read a book.
Oh, the humanity. It's like they're hitting the ground like wet patches of cement.
What's it called again?
Murderbot Diaries.
All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. Live long and prosper. Stay safe. I hope everybody voted. If you didn't, well, you got to wait.
I didn't vote. There we go.
Good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, Bruce, you should not have been able to vote.
Hopefully you didn't vote for our election.
Bruce did not vote.
As I always say, vote early, vote often.
Exactly. That's what got us into trouble.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry.
You're going to get me shut down on Facebook for false information.
Oh, for fake news.
So, yeah. All right. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. All right. And...